second into the program out of Istanbul, political observer and diplomat, Mr. Hatem Yavuz, and out of a London journalist and political commentator, Said Mohsen Abbas. Thank you both for being with us, starting us off actually in Istanbul. Well, what is it about Khashoggi that would trouble the regime in Riyadh? I mean, is there something he has said or done that would make the Saudi royals this mad and wanting to kill him?
Well, first of all, Jamal Khashoggi is a, first of all, he's officially what is in exile in the United States, self-exile. And he's worked with many media groups around the world, including Al Jazeera and CNN and so on. Jamal has been not a critic, but more of an advisor to the Saudi government. However, what we are facing with the Saudi, the KSA, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, is not present, it's past, which is making, you know, when the Saudis are under duress, they do some awkward actions. Kappa? When the Saudis are under duress, they do some awkward actions. Mm-hmm. One of them is, let's begin with in 2015, Kapala.
Okay. Can you hear me? There seems to be some audio difficulty. Let me cross. I'll cross back over to you. Let me cross over to London right now. It's Said Mohsen Abbas, and then we'll get back to Istanbul, hopefully. Said Mohsen, how likely is it that Khashoggi has actually been killed? I mean, do you think that Riyadh would actually be that bold as to kill one of its nationals inside a foreign country, inside of its consulate like this?
Well, the current regime of Saudi Arabia, ostensibly driven by bin Salman, is capable of anything. I think they've shown that over the last couple of years. I mean, everything from detaining most of the princes that were even part of the family of the Al Saud in a seven-star hotel. I mean, that was the first bizarre, if you like, act that was on record. But they are perfectly capable of doing bizarre acts. But even for them, this would be a real low. I mean, what they've effectively done, if they've killed Khashoggi, is an extrajudicial killing on their own territory, albeit in the consulate in Istanbul. But to carry out an extrajudicial killing in your own consulate seems more like a kind of a, out of a sort of comedy sketch or sort of a farce, really. If they haven't killed him, well, then it sounds like enforced detention to me. And even that is pretty bizarre. And there are some very interesting interrogative investigations that the Turkish establishment is going to have to carry out and to come out with the truth.
Well, back to Hatem in Istanbul. Right. Hopefully we have a good connection now. Hatem, Saudi Arabia has denied the accusations. However, there are some witnesses saying that they saw something being put in the trunk of the embassy car and also drive out of the consulate. Also, Riyadh has been asked about its cameras, as our correspondent said in the very beginning, inside of the consulate, and the staff has told police that the cameras were not working on Tuesday, the day he went missing. What do you think about these incidental, perhaps, statements, and what does it mean?
Well, that's more of a small technical talk. But the reality is, being a diplomat, accredited ambassador or consulate, in Saudi territory gives you the luxury of having the Vienna Convention. The Vienna Convention gives you immunity. So basically, if in the event of a full-scale investigation, the best scenario is going to be non persona grata, meaning non-wanted person, meaning that the Saudi consulate or staff might have to go back to Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. There may not be any sort of implications in judicial procedures, etc.
Let me jump in here, Hatem. I mean, it's a little bit different than we've had, for example, consulate staff or embassy staff happening to, let's say, run over a local and then sent back, and understanding the diplomatic immunity, but beyond that individual or individuals perhaps who are involved in this situation, one would think on an international level, for example, the government of Turkey and the government of Saudi Arabia, that that would be problematic.
Yes, it will be maybe a bit a diplomatic shuffle, and between the two countries, to see that an individual, a citizen, of its own national inside the consulate, not coming out and disappearing out of thin air. Whatever the speculation is, whether he was put into a trunk and put onto a plane under a diplomatic bag, is disturbing, yes. However, that the Turkish state has to go by its rules and regulations, whether it has committed, if the consulate or consulate members or whoever has committed a crime, and whether that can be implemented by the Vienna Convention. The Vienna Convention is very strong. Let's not underestimate the convention, and it gives immunity to most or even all the foreign missions throughout the world. So we cannot speculate right now when there's no physical evidence upon Jamal Khashoggi.
Okay. Well, Said right Mohsen, let me just turn back to London. Said Mohsen, there's speculation that a team was actually sent there from Saudi Arabia to kill Khashoggi because there's evidence that several men flew in from Saudi Arabia, went to the consulate, and several hours later went back. Now, if this is true, isn't this indicative of a rogue regime, and what would need to be done to stop this type of behavior?
Well, it is a rogue regime. Saudi Arabia is well known for this kind of intervention already. I mean, let me give you the example of Mohammed Al-Otaibi, who was intercepted en route to Norway, a political refugee, and he was stopped in Doha Airport. And the Qatari government collaborated with the Saudis in basically hijacking him and basically taking him off to Saudi Arabia, where he subsequently was given a 14-year prison sentence on trumped-up charges. Basically, he was a human rights activist and defender. So you can quite clearly see that Saudi Arabia has got away with this before, and for them to maybe perhaps try and think of doing this with Khashoggi, who was, he is an anti-Salman, bin Salman, if you like, speaker. He's also been anti-Yemen war. He's got issues with the establishment, so there is a good reason to be perhaps arrested in the eyes of this regime.
Hatem, go ahead. You want to say something?
Yeah, but please excuse me here. If we're just going to blame it on the Saudis, I mean, I'm not supporting what's going on here, unfortunately, but the U.S. is not prime example with Guantanamo. You know, so, you know, they've been capturing people throughout the world and shoving them into cells for years, for decades, actually. So I don't want to go into that concept. The point I'm trying to get here is the Saudis are under duress, and they're generally under duress by the Trump administration. They were actually under duress prior to the Trump administration with the Obama, whereby they were threatened by legal action on the 9/11 issue, where the Saudi government was responsible and they will be penalized massively. So In Saudi Arabia, the difference between, say, Iran, which takes a cool head on issues, on foreign issues, Saudi Arabia are under the umbrella of the United States and under massive duress, and are not taking their actions within or without their country, within or outside their boundaries, logically. They're taking it more aggressively and emotionally, and they've never had in the past, where you've got administrations massing immense pressure to either pay for the damages of 9/11 or buy massive weaponry and be under the helm of the United States. Saudi Arabia is under immense duress, and they don't know how to behave about it.
So what you're saying then, Hatem, is that the root of the problem then is the United States in what we see as far as Saudi behavior?
I call repercussions of what's happened. If you say something wrong about Mohammed bin Salman, who's a very educated man, by the way, I've had very personal talks with, a short personal talk with Abdul Jabbar, the foreign minister of Saudi Arabia. He's a very educated man and very moderate man. So is Mohammed bin Salman, who with his perception of a new Saudi governance, is far beyond of what we see on the TV.
You're talking about the Crown Prince and you're talking about the Foreign Minister. And when you say that they're educated and that they are reasonable, I mean, the first thing that comes to one's mind is Yemen and what the Saudi regime is doing there, and that people are starving there, and tens of thousands
wars
have been killed.
I agree with you. All the proxy wars. Qatar is one example. Their bloodline, they cut it off. Was that logical? Their bloodline. Forget Yemen.
Okay, what do you say to that, Seth Mohsen? Let me cross back over London. What do you say to that, Seth Mohsen?
Well, I think the record speaks for itself. If we look at Saudi Arabia's track record on human rights, Amnesty International and virtually every other neutral human rights body counts well over 10 to 15,000 prisoners of conscience languishing in the prisons of Saudi Arabia. During bin Salman's time, that has not reduced, it's increased. So these reasonable individuals who on the one hand are saying we're going to allow women to drive, which they weren't even allowing to do previously, are actually persecuting human rights and political activists who have no real crime. The reality is they've got a jumped up set of kangaroo courts. I think the criminal court, I think CCS is one of them, which is supposed to be catching terrorists. Instead, the laws and those courts are being used to apprehend academics, writers, clerics, anybody who is against them. I can give loads of examples. I mean, only now, the first woman potentially to be executed or hanged by this regime is up for a decision in October. She was from Qatif, she's actually now literally hanging on a lifeline. And these are people who are simply protesting against the Shia, who are being, if you like, smashed and persecuted in the east of Saudi Arabia. This is all under Salman's, if you like, auspices. These people are not reasonable individuals. What they are doing is acting even more autocratically, even more despotically, even with their own family. And Khashoggi, who was ostensibly, as our other guest did point out, was part of that establishment. But actually, nobody can be forgiven if they say so much as a slight thing against this regime. So it is just far worse for humanitarian rights, and you know, 10 or 15,000 prisoners of conscience with no redress to genuine judicial, if you like, reviews or trials is not a good look.
And Hatem, what about Turkey itself? You're sitting in Istanbul. Do you think that Ankara would exert the necessary pressure against Riyadh? Of course, Turkey benefits from many Saudi visitors as well as many Saudi business deals, and as we know, money talks. Your take on that side of things?
Turkey and Saudi Arabia has been in a bit of an up and down situation in the last 2 or 3 years. However, Turkey has a very soft spot for Saudi Arabia and for its leadership and for the House of Sauds. And at the same time has to play a very balanced equation with Iran, which is a Shiite dominant nation. Because in Turkey itself, we have an estimated 20, 25 million Alawites, which are a Shiite breakaway. And at the same time, with Iran being Azeri, northern part of Iran's being Azeri, being a Turkic origin. So therefore, we should look at it in a different perspective regarding the relationship with Iran and Saudi Arabia for Turkey. Both countries are very important. And Turkey should play a buffering role, not more of a lopsided role, more of a buffering role, more of a negotiator. And that's a luxury with Turkey, being a bridge. I do see that this issue will be a thaw in Turkey foreign affairs, because if nothing comes out very clearly, this lobbying on the outside of Amnesty International and the EU and so on will continue. And most of the media groups around the world will continue investigating Jamal Khashoggi, who is a very moderate, frankly speaking, a very moderate and very logical gentleman.
Okay, what about that said, Mohsen? Hatem has said that they'll continue investigating. But again, as I said before, money talks. And we've seen Saudi Arabia buy itself out of so many situations. What about this? Is it going to make a difference what has been done? Because as our guest has said, inside of Turkey, its biggest backer is the United States. And the United States, though, of course, it says it stands for human rights. We see that when it supports a regime like Saudi Arabia, actually that is not the priority in its relationship. What do you think is going to happen, or will anything happen, to put pressure on the regime in Riyadh if this murder has really taken place?
Well, the United States certainly doesn't have any reason to put pressure on Saudi Arabia. They haven't done so on any issue of human rights up to this point, in my kind of understanding. Turkey itself is a wheeler-dealer nation, basically. On the one hand, they end up supporting, like Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and all sorts of other terrorists for their own interests. And on the other, they're also making great relations with Russia and Iran, and ebbing and flowing. They also happen to have good relations with Israel, off the record. So, to be honest with you, with Mr. Erdogan, you can never predict what
he's going to do. And on that note, so sorry,
to do,
gotta end this.
Yeah,
we're out of time.
Usually,
appreciate both
good,
of our guests being with us. Avistan Bull, Hatem Yovaz, and out of London said Mohsen Abbas. And viewers, hopefully you'll join us next time. Appreciate you being with us on this debate.